Yeah, let's see if it works this time around. Okay, let's check. That looks good. So,
good.
We're live, basically.
We're live. Let's do this.
Not really live.
Don't get hit by a truck.
Yeah, that's kind of the goal always.
Yeah.
Hopefully say something that isn't too stupid and don't get hit by a truck.
And don't die.
Don't die.
Rule number one, don't F up and die.
Exactly. All right, I'm just going to wing it, but I think I know the way. And it's going to be a little bit uphill.
That's
We're going to be a little bit huffing and puffing.
Will do.
And we'll just see where it takes us.
Yep.
So, yeah, like I said yesterday, you kind of had a couple of interesting thoughts and questions. And I was like, are you willing to go deeper into this for like an hour or 90 minutes or something? And obviously, it relates to a lot of the things you ran into when building out White Noise.
Yes.
So, tell me about it. What are the walls you ran into?
What a journey. What a journey. Honestly, it's like one of those things of if I'd known how hard it was going to be, I maybe would have thought about it a bit more. But no, I mean, you can't hope for more than to have a really hard problem to work on.
Yeah.
That matters, right? And I think the biggest thing, and we kind of knew this going in, right? Like the MLS RFC, the paper says, like, you know, strict ordering is required.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's a continuous key agreement scheme. And so really all MLS is giving you is the system to go start with this key and this is how you get to the next key.
Yeah.
And this is how you know, guarantee that these are the members of the group and, you know, people have what they're supposed to have and not supposed to have other stuff. They don't care about identity and they don't care about delivery.
Yeah.
And I was like, cool, Noster, identity, delivery. We can do this. I think I vastly underestimated how hard it would be to keep that ordering proper. And that's basically the sum of all the problems. You know, all the problems come from that. You know, we have to, in some way, shape, or form, get relays to give us everything and then figure out a way to order those things. And if you are ever missing a single commit, which in MLS speak is the thing that evolves the group state.
Yeah.
If you're ever missing a single one of those, one, with Noster, you don't know that you're missing it necessarily. And if you don't have it, you can't continue to evolve the group in the right way.
Yeah. And in practice, what then happens is, like, let's say you have a group chat, and let's say there's like 8 people in the group chat.
Yep.
In practice, correct me if I'm wrong, but in practice, what would happen is 4 people, like the group splits kind of, and 4 people, without noticing it,
correct,
are actually in a different group chat in a different room. And the other 4, like without noticing it, there's a split and there's 2 different forked histories.
And
basically,
no one can know that that's happened because they only have their local state.
Yeah.
There is no like server you can ask.
It doesn't look as if anything's wrong, but like basically everything's wrong.
But everything's wrong, correct. And obviously there's a really good solution to this, which is called a centralized server that orders the commits for you and coordinates everything and sends you truth.
Yeah.
But that's not Noster and that's like not what we're trying to do. We're trying to build a system that is unstoppable. Like, I think I started the whole project thinking, okay, we're going to make the most private messenger ever. And through this process, I think my thinking has evolved to know what we're actually building is an unstoppable messenger.
Yeah.
You know, one that is end-to-end encrypted, but cannot be shut down by anyone. And that is as interesting, but is a very different sort of set of things that you have to think about when you're thinking about the trade-offs.
Yeah.
And putting a coordinator in the middle of that breaks that entire thing.
Will it always break that, or is there a way to have coordinators that are equally trustless and exchangeable as relays are?
So that's definitely one option. You know, I've talked to some very accomplished cryptographers in the space about this, and that is some of the stuff that some of them are actually working on, which is how do you build a server that is as trustless as possible, but still you have, you know, cryptographic guarantees that they're doing things correctly, and you can still swap them out. You know, unilateral exit still exists for it.
Yeah.
You know, you swap them at any time, but it does require, you know, some coordination on the group level to say, you know, coordinator A is our lead coordinator for now, and if you want to switch, you've got to make that call somehow and know to make the switch.
Yeah, I see. That's the issue of, like, let's say you're all over the world, and an underground C cable goes down, and like, again, 8
correct
people in the group, and for 4 people, the coordinator A is unreachable.
Right.
How do you agree that that's the actual case?
Exactly.
And so on and so forth.
I mean, this is like one of these fundamental, like mathematically, you're right. There's no way to perfectly solve this problem. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. There's no way to like perfectly mathematically solve this.
Yeah.
And so I think what we're working towards is how do we make it as close to, you know, perfectly orderable. So you get all these messages in off of relays and you have a, you know, deterministic state machine that helps you go, okay, this is the order based on these messages. And if I find myself in a situation where I'm fairly certain I'm somehow out of sync or something seems a bit off, there's a really easy way to just automatically recover back into the group, which MLS thankfully gives us this, you know, re-init proposal.
Yeah, I see. We briefly hit on this yesterday, I think, when we discussed Pablo's terrible invention of the serial killer relay. Thanks for nothing, Pablo.
Thank you, Pablo.
Yeah, great.
And your naming and your,
well done.
Your amazing naming ability continues to stand untested. Like
he sent me the GitHub link and then one line below it, and it just said, I'm going to regret this so much, you know, like it's his second biggest sin after
NSEC Bunker.
After NSEC Bunker, yeah. Oh, man. Yeah, well, but I do understand kind of the motivation for it, of course. And we had this discussion yesterday also with Kelly and basically how to best do this without breaking fundamental aspects of Nostr, basically.
Yep.
And my argument was like, let's please not call it relays. Like if those are, if the special purpose of these things is like to provide
hash chain things or
exactly,
whatever it
is. Provide an order of events that can't be broken, like that, that's enforced on a relay level. Let's call it something else. And yeah, there's various opinions on that, I would say. But would this, like would the serial killer relay help in your use case, question one, and question two, kind of, we hit on this I think yesterday as well. Like you mentioned re-entering the correct state and all those kind of things. Like how far back do you need to go? Like if we build up chains of events, how long will these chains be?
I mean, I guess an ordering server or a coordinator doesn't solve all the problems, and it like everything comes with trade-offs. You would be required effectively to lose a little bit of privacy in order to make sure that each of these events, these commits you're publishing, are sort of recognizable as a event, as a commit, and has a pointer back to the thing it's referencing off of.
Explain that some more. How would you sacrifice privacy?
Well, so let's think about a really simple
because
version
the
coordinator has to know what it is. And the coordinator already knows like a group ID that is rotatable and changeable and things like that, but still it needs to know that like this is this specific type of event that's important to be ordered, and here's the previous event, you know, that it's pointing to. And so it can then create a map of, okay, these are all the changes that have happened in this group over time. It can't see what the changes were, but based on timing and a lot of other things, you get more and more.
You can at least glimpse activity.
Of course,
those kind of things.
And like, and you know, unless you're using Tor everywhere, like, you know, you can, a sophisticated actor can definitely, you know, wind stuff together with IP addresses and all sorts of things. So it's a trade-off, like everything.
And this, because I, all right, let me see how I can.
Well, let's do this. I'll do a really like simple example back. Like I think the ordering things make a lot of sense for certain event types, where, like, I mean, maybe even like your metadata profile is a good example. Like you want to be able to only replace it when you know what the previous one was, so you don't clobber some other change. Okay, that makes sense.
But you'll always, hey, we managed. That's the graveyard. Perfect. I was so hoping for that.
Yeah.
Now I know where I am again. But again, it's not a problem that can be solved. Like, I think I brought this up briefly yesterday. I've been using Sync Thing for like ever. Like ever since, before it was called Sync Thing. And there are some other tools that basically are like local first and have synchronization and like peer-to-peer synchronization and so on. And you always run into these issues. Like sometimes I'll edit a note, for example, on my phone, and I don't realize that the phone is in flight mode or something. And I edit the same note that I like every day for me starts the same.
Yeah.
Like most, a lot of people have a blank sheet of paper. I have like an empty note for every day, and I'll just write stuff in there. And so, you know, then for whatever reason, my phone has no connectivity or it's in flight mode. I add something, I add a line, and then I go back to the laptop and it's connected, and I add another line. I don't even realize that I created a conflict, but obviously it's a conflict. And so the metadata example that you mentioned could be the same thing, you know, like you have a relay on your phone and 100%. Somebody added them.
Yep.
It's like you can't solve this issue.
And like, yeah, no, you can't. Like there's no mathematical way to solve this problem in a, you know, perfectly.
And everyone who ever worked with Git knows this. Like,
yes.
That's
you'll always run into a conflict at some point.
And you'll have to resolve that.
And you basically just have to have like, what are the rules that we use to break a conflict and decide someone's a winner? And it's totally arbitrary, but you have to set some rules.
Yeah.
And that's. Effectively, what we're evolving towards in Marmot is like, we're going to have a deterministic state machine, and there's going to be rules, and they're going to be tunable, but your group agrees that like, these are the consensus, not consensus, but like, these are the convergence rules for this group, and this is how the state machine will function.
And the reason why it has to be a deterministic state machine, or like a graph-like thing, is because you can't rely on timestamps, because timestamps can't be forged.
Exactly, exactly. And so like, that was actually one of the main, I think, flaws with my original design in Marmot is that we used timestamps to go, okay, just order it naively by timestamp and then lexicographically by ID.
Yeah.
It's still such an
underappreciated thing of the Bitcoin system that it actually doesn't rely on timestamps, really.
It's bananas. Like, you think about these really small things and you're like, oh yeah, it doesn't really use clocks at all.
It's such an important point and concept that it's what makes everything work so beautifully.
And it sounds so simple that people very quickly overlook it, and it's not at all.
If you go deep into the difficulty adjustment, you'll realize, oh wow, that's so ingenious.
Yeah.
And the funny thing is also, like, I sometimes point this out when I talk about these things. Like, if you try to set up an Ethereum node or any proof of stake system, the first step is always like, make sure your clocks are accurate and connect to this time server.
Yeah.
You know, like, you need like nanosecond accuracy for all your clocks, and no one can ever cheat ever.
Yeah. Exactly.
Because otherwise things just go to hell.
Yep.
But anyway, okay, so you have the state machine. And what I actually wanted to kind of line up in terms of a question is, I've been using Marmot a lot. I was a power user for a while because I used it exclusively to chat with my agents.
Oh, but you're going to like what I've been working on
recently. But it's all one-on-one chats.
Yes, yes.
And that's the easy one,
the really easy one, yeah.
So
for me, Marmot, the way we've got it built, White Noise Now, works really well for one-to-one chats for very long periods of time.
Yeah, awesome.
Without any problems.
Because I mainly used Pika. And I used it for a couple of weeks, like exclusively, because for me it worked more reliable than NIP 17. It was just the most reliable thing.
Mm-hmm.
And so my question is kind of like, is there a trade-off you can make? Let me say like two more sentences. And I talked about this with Justin a little bit. It's like, to me, kind of the goal of like perfect privacy makes less and less sense, or like perfect encryption everything, the bigger the group gets.
Mm-hmm.
Like in a 2,000 people group,
someone's a Fed.
Just assume it's public, basically.
Yes,
you know,
agree.
It's like, I mean, I'm being extreme now, but it's like there's at least like 5 Feds and 3 spooks and like 2 Russian spies and so on in there.
Yep.
Like just be, and there's someone who is a streamer or something and has the chat open and streams the whole chat history to Twitch 24/7 and all those kind of things.
Yep, yep.
You know, like you just have to assume that.
You have to assume.
And so talk to me about your thoughts in regards to that. From like one-on-one chats to like 2,000 people group size.
Yeah, I mean, like MLS says you can go up to groups of hundreds of thousands. And I think, like you said, really in the actual, mathematically, whatever, that's possible. But operationally, that's just not how it works.
Yeah.
Like, privacy degrades very quickly with the size of the group. And so I think there are ways that you can fall back to simpler systems. And I think that's really smart. And I think as we develop this better, we'll find like, okay, where are the limits here that actually kind of make more sense? You know, there's also aspects of the MLS protocol. There's like MLS Lite, which is coming out soon, which helps you run larger groups with much less overhead for most participants.
What's the magic sauce there?
So the magic sauce is that you have, you know, there are a set number or some number of users in the group that have the full state. And those are the only users that can actually change the group's makeup or like evolve the group state. But everybody else still gets enough information that they can decrypt messages and encrypt messages.
Okay.
So they basically have the message keys, but they don't look at the full like member tree, and they can't verify the full member tree either. they can just go, okay, I can send and receive messages in this group.
Interesting. Okay. And in regular MLS, that hierarchy would be flat, basically.
The hierarchy is flat, yeah. MLS doesn't actually have a concept of admins or anything like that. That was something we layered in on top.
Interesting. Okay.
But yeah, like any full member of a group can do anything they want.
Because in... that's actually the right way. I don't think it matters, but let's go there.
Sure.
It sounds kind of like a very sane approach to me, because in most systems that have widespread use, mm-hmm. the person who creates the group is automatically the admin.
Right.
And like Signal,
that's
for
what
example,
we've done. That's so how we defaulted
and
in.
And it's kind of a very natural
yep.
way of doing things. Can you, in MLS Lite, can you then promote someone to an admin?
Yeah, of course. You just need to send them the full state.
Okay.
And that's the way all MLS groups work, is that like everybody has the full state right now, which means that everybody can verify that, yeah, these are the actual members and, you know, this is what the full view looks like.
Yeah.
The way we've done admin stuff up until now is a little clunky. We're moving to a newer concept in MLS, which is called app components, which are a way to sort of destructure these like big extensions into really small little pieces, and that gives us the ability to like stack all these things together as like features in a
okay,
sense.
I see.
And so the feature becomes really small and thin and really, you know, specific to what it's trying to do, and you can use those to negotiate group capabilities.
Yeah.
And so if Pika or whatever client, you know, Pika's sort of defunct, but whatever client, you know, that implements this, say they don't support all the features, White Noise does. If I go to create a group with that person, I can see in their key package, like...
It's great, right?
We're going to go right to the construction.
Yeah. you clip onto microphones and there's like construction work everywhere. That's always how
straight
it
away.
Like leaf blowers just appear out of nowhere and people with power tools start
power
to hunt
tools,
you.
Power washers, it's, cranes.
You just have to power through.
Assume, like,
there is no other way.
Okay, so yeah, back to the point. Like, it basically gives us the ability to do capability negotiation. So you've got, you know, one client that doesn't support all these features. The key package that was created by that client shows, hey, these are the features we support. And if I'm on White Noise and I want to add you, I see that in your key package and I go, okay, the group I'm going to create will only support these subset of features that we both can do. And that then is like, okay, great. We now have a group that works.
So you announce what features you support.
Exactly. And that's the whole point of the key package system.
Yeah.
Which has also been a really big learning. Like, we made those... you know, normal events in the beginning, and that was a stupid idea. It should have been replaceable from the start, but you need these key packages that are client specific, because if you have multiple clients, they have to support different things or, you know, whatever
it is.
I see.
Okay. Interesting. Yeah. Okay.
So it is.
No,
I mean,
that makes sense.
There's still a lot of elegance to MLS. I think it is very complicated, but I finally have my head around it. It only took 2 years.
Yeah.
But. It is quite elegant in a lot of ways. It's kind of in other ways, it's quite, it's like a bit of a blunt tool because of that required ordering, because of how heavyweight the whole system is in terms of how much data you have to move around if you want to have the full tree on every client.
Yeah, I think the issue kind of is, or the paradox you're running into, and I think Justin and I hit briefly on it, like at least in theory we did, I think.
Yeah.
We talked a lot of other shit and we weren't always super accurate with everything. But it's basically, Nostr is designed to be a broadcast system. And so kind of you blast everything everywhere.
Uh-huh.
And with private communications, that's not necessarily beneficial, right?
Correct.
And so that's part of the issue, especially if you have a large shared state, right? Like you don't even want to blast it everywhere in the first place,
right?
And so kind of share your thoughts around that kind of that paradoxical setup that we have now using, and it's not only for doing MLS on Nostr, it's for many other things, doing many
anything,
other things.
Anything
Nostr.
Private, basically. Yeah. I mean, it's a fundamental tension, right? It's you're right. It's a broadcast system rather than a access controlled system.
Yeah.
And so I think that means that effectively anything you want to do that's properly access controlled, you have to start thinking about, what are the risks in this? How much does the metadata actually matter to an observer or an attacker?
Yeah.
And then, you know, act accordingly. Like, if you really want a properly private thing, you need to run your own relays, and that means you're actually just running a centralized server.
Yeah, and that's kind of my issue, because the same, it's a different topic entirely, but it fits in the same category, in the sense that we have this relay zoo now.
Yeah.
We have auth relays, and we have WebTrust relays, and we have, like, completely personal relays.
Yes, and all these different relay lists.
And we have, like, you know, profile-only relays that only go for kind zero, and so on, and so on, and so on. And so... So my point is kind of, and also like community relays, they are really big.
Right.
That's what I was getting at, where it's like, okay, this is the community relay, and it's not actually a relay in some sense, it's the central server of the community, and you have the relay feed, and it acts like a forum for the community, and so on.
Right, right.
And to me, kind of that, you know, like I take issue calling this thing still a relay.
right. I also do. This is why I never liked NIP29 relays. I was like, this is dumb. This is just a server.
It's just kind of. I think we'll go here. Then we're almost in the beautiful garden. We won't get run over by
a tram,
trams, and other things. So yesterday the discussion about Pablo's terrible serial killer thing.
Throw him under the bus as often as possible. We love you, Pablo.
Oh man, you know, no, like to give Pablo the credit, you know, if you ship 2,500 projects, you'll have two or three that are a little bit,
you know, a bit wobbly
on the edge of sensible. No, but it's that was my main point to Kelly, because he really wants to have that for the cashew stuff.
Yep.
Because that's obviously the issue right now with NIP 60,
right.
NIP 61.
You don't know what you don't know.
Exactly. Yeah. And it's precisely the same issue. You have the proofs, some are lost and so on, and you have your cashew balance basically. And it's just one day you look and it's 120 sats, and the other day you look and it's like 50 sats.
Yep.
And it's like,
what happens?
And then you look again and it's 300 sats. Yeah. You know, like there can be positive surprises
I mean,
as well.
I think your metaphor of changing your pocket is probably the right
exactly.
one there. It's like, oh, whatever,
the pocket, and the pocket as a whole, and sometimes stuff drops out, and then you find change under the couch again. And like, that's just how it works.
It's just how it works.
And I like it. I actually kind of like this in some sense, because like if you play around with it, it's kind of clear that you shouldn't put serious money in it.
Right.
Like it's like some sats here and there and so on. It's just to play around and to, well, you know, experiment more or less. And to make this really work, again, just like in your use case, you need to have chained events. You need to have strict ordering of events so that you can make sure that your whole balance is there.
Yeah.
And in your case, that the whole group state remains intact.
Exactly. And like, you know, I am coming around more and more to this idea that like we really need to look at Nostr relays as a thing that makes it unstoppable, and like that unstoppable property is based on the fact that they're totally commodity. You can just dump stuff in the direction.
Yeah.
You can't ever be quite sure that you've got everything, but of what's there, like you're going to find what you can find from many, many sources, and that's going to be good enough for most things that you need to do.
Yeah.
And when it comes to cryptography, that doesn't, you break all sorts of stuff that way. And the only way to fix that really is, again, like we talked about before, you've got to say, okay, I'm going to trade off the unstoppability of this for something that's less unstoppable. And it's like degrees then of, okay, how centralized do I need to go to make this work?
And the point I was trying to make to Kelly to some degree is that to me, like intuitively in some way, this is a centralized force relying on on chained events basically. It's just, it depends on how far back do you need to go. Like because you build up this state more or less, you can't, it's unacceptable, it's completely unacceptable that a quarter or half or a third of the chain is missing for many use cases.
For many use cases. Not for all of them, but for many,
For yours, it's different. Again, like we talked, you probably can throw away most of the history.
Yep.
And depending on the system, like maybe it's okay if only a few people have the full state and all those kind of things.
Yep.
But for, we talked about, for example, edits.
Yeah.
And Rubble brought up video edits and how they are chained together and how this is also a chain of events and so on.
Yep.
And
you can't do deltas without the full history.
Yep. Exactly.
It's not possible.
And that's, I think, what was why FearJeff was so angry about edits being introduced to kind once, because you have immediately this problem that you need to get all the events of the past to, you know, have the correct chain of edits and all those kind of things.
Yeah.
And so to me, the beauty of Nostr and the relay system is the to me the beauty in part is precisely that there is no global, that there is no global state, and stuff can disappear and reappear. And I mean, one of the quotes in Bitcoin is basically, you know, nodes can join and leave the network at will.
Yes.
And with Nostr relays, for me, it's similar. Like, if a relay is offline or unavailable, maybe there's a little bit of data missing, but like, who cares? You know,
right?
It's Nostr.
Exactly.
It's just,
and,
like,
and I mean, I think I'm with you on that. I'm like, I am staunchly on this side of the line. I understand that I can make a coordinator and make this work easily.
Yeah.
And that's not, I'm not interested in that.
Yeah.
The problem I'm trying to solve is, can we do this in a actually decentralized way where we don't have to count on any of the relays existing?
Yeah.
And I mean, we have to be able to, like,
let's actually go back and go, and go back stay in the green. So you want to solve it in a pure way, basically, which is way harder, and
fundamentally maybe not possible. Like, I think we have to accept that that might be the case, that we have to go over the line to make this work.
Unless you kind of introduce these special types of relays that only allow writes if you point back to previous events.
Exactly. So, like,
and the relay acts as like the central sequencing server.
Right.
That you'll need for these kind of use cases.
Right. I mean, that might be a trade-off that we are ultimately forced to make.
Yeah.
But I'm not ready to accept that yet. And I think a lot of people have told me this over the last 2 years. Look, you just need to have this sequencer or coordinator.
Yeah.
I'm like, if we wanted to not solve the problem we're trying to solve, that does it. But that's not what we're trying to do here.
Yeah. All right. Yeah. Okay. So that's where we're at right now. And you're still... You're still unsure whether you would adopt a serial killer relay type solution.
I mean, I wouldn't yet.
Okay.
I wouldn't yet at all.
Because Kelly is very keen. Like,
very,
I think he's
keen.
Building on it right now.
Yeah, and he's
thanks,
been trying
thanks,
to convince
Pablo.
Me. He's been trying to convince me of this for a while.
Yeah.
And I'm like, nope.
Okay.
But I mean, look, the way that I'm kind of looking at it right now is, I feel like if we can get that state machine working, so that maybe once a month in all the groups that you're in, you hit this screen, you open a group, and it's like, hey, we saw you somehow got out of sync. We automatically re-initted. You might be missing a few messages in that break, but you're back in the group and everything can continue going forward. If that happens once a month to you, I would say, okay, we've got a system that is good enough for almost all use cases of this.
And on what would this depend on? Would this depend on connectivity, or would this also depend on group size and other factors?
It depends on everything. I think, you know, with smaller groups, obviously, it should almost never happen.
Yeah.
It's very simple. In larger groups, it gets much more complicated, but I still think we can get it to, you know, a vanishingly small number of times where that happens.
So worst case would be really large groups in places with very bad connectivity.
Exactly.
Yeah.
With lots and lots of adds
lots
and removes
of activity.
And yeah.
Yeah.
But like group state
group,
changes,
yeah.
not just
I see.
Messages. Like if you're I just see. Doing messages and no group state changes, that's trivial because those messages can arrive out of order, they can not arrive, it doesn't matter. That doesn't change anything, and you're never gonna desync because you didn't get a normal application message.
Yeah. Okay, I see. Yeah. I guess we'll find lots of these things out as we move along.
Yeah.
What has me bullish though is that in general, for me right now, multiple things are working. And I mentioned before when I was talking about using Marmot to talk to my agents and so on, that worked flawlessly. And I have to say, if you know what you're doing in terms of your relay setup, NIP17 works really well as well.
That's true.
For this kind of use case.
I mean, you have to trade off the forward secrecy and
post-compromise. Doesn't have any of that.
There are no solutions. There are only trade-offs.
Doesn't have any of that. But I just want to point it out because I think, like, even most power users use Telegram to chat with their OpenClaw.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
And so check out the OpenClaw NIP17 plugin. Fabian built that originally.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
I actually didn't know that existed.
No, it's awesome. And I added some features to that because what people really like in Telegram is like the instant responsiveness.
Yes.
And the NIP17 plugin has that as well.
It does streams.
Like, not streams, but it will do emoji reactions.
Okay.
On the chat messages, depending on what it does. Like, nice. There's a shaka once it's received.
Yep.
And then, depending on thinking or tool call, it will use different emojis.
Nice.
And so you can watch the emojis come.
Yeah.
And it's still doing stuff.
So I just NVK nerd sniped me a little bit with his agent noise thing. He's built this, he wants to be able to use white noise to talk to an agent on a remote box. And so I was like, well, I'm playing around with this version 2 stuff. Like, let me use an app component. Let me build a text streaming thing.
Yeah.
And so now I've got an app that runs, and I can, ping a claw or, it's basically just a box with a claw or a codex on it. And it starts to just stream text back in.
Awesome.
And the way it works is it sends a first message going, hey, I'm about to stream some text. Here's the quick server you're going to connect to. Stream the text, and it just starts showing up.
Awesome.
And then at the end, it sends an anchor at the bottom going, here's the full transcript, replace all that crap.
Yeah, awesome.
And it works amazingly well.
Cool.
Yeah,
awesome.
It's really, really fun.
And the reason why I want to point this out is because the why all of this is interesting is all of it relies on cryptographic identifiers, which means if you set up an open call or whatever, you don't need to get like 15 different phone numbers and like a new SIM card and like create new Signal and WhatsApp accounts and all this kind of BS that everyone then has to go through.
Hey, here's a CLI for this thing called white noise.
Yeah.
Use it and ping me a message when you're done.
And that's how I set it up with Pika as well, and also my NIP17 setup. Uh-huh. Like once you have an agent going, it's just like, here's the plugin, here's the repo. DM me when you're done.
Yeah.
And it works.
And it works.
It's like it does everything,
so
sets
quick.
Everything up, installs the thing, and then you receive an also DM, and you're off to the races.
Yeah.
And same for, a DM on white noise or...
And I mean, the other thing is like having the ability to just spin up all these different identities in a messenger for whatever use case you want is actually a really big deal.
Yeah.
Like it's none of the other tools out there allow you to do this.
Yeah, and my setup right now is, and I think it's actually a bigger deal than is talked about right now, because I'm, everything's dangerous. the fact that I use cryptographic identities only allows me to create one agent per project.
Yeah.
And so I just, I have whatever Bitcoin resources and NASA resources and
like Ants
and Boris and like all my little projects.
Yep.
And I can, they all have NPUBs, of course, and the NPUB is the NPUB of the project.
Right.
And if I need to do a feature or a bug fix or whatever, I just DM this thing. I just send a DM to the project.
Yes. Yep. And the project has its own identity.
It's such a natural way of doing things. It's so awesome.
Yeah.
And like
wires. Like that's the thing about agents. Like you. As long as you keep a session on a single thing, it makes total sense and the agent doesn't get confused and fucked up.
If
you are in a single session and you tell an agent to go work on another project,
a system like OpenClaw and so on, now we have all these memory systems and so on, it's like the memory and the history builds up precisely just for the main specific knowledge for this
one
project.
System. Yep.
To me, it's the best I've found. Like, because I played around with having multiple personas, like a researcher and a coder.
Yeah.
It's all bullshit.
Yeah, I agree.
It's like...
I basically stripped back to the most simple agent harness possible.
Yeah.
I'm like, just, it needs to be basic. Just let the model shine through it and,
Me, the important unlock was, like, do have, like, one closed system per project, basically.
Yep. Yeah.
And that works really well.
Yeah, and cryptographic identity, it nails it.
Like. Yeah. Yeah, so there's lots of stuff going on there. And, I mean... I was actually excited when I saw Nostr as one of the default options in OpenClaw.
Yep.
And excitement lasted for about 2 seconds because then I was like, okay, it's NIP04.
Oh, God. Who did that?
And I think it's also half broken, you know?
Yeah,
like
of course it is. Of course it is.
Nothing worked.
It's Nostr. Of course it is.
And so I feel like we came a long way from NIP04, you know?
Yep.
Like,
I was saying earlier, I kind of shifted the thinking around this from being like the most private thing to being much more on the permissionless, unstoppable side. Because, I mean, the other thing that's massive everywhere now is the whole KYC of the internet.
And, like,
this just sidesteps all of that. You know, they can come
back.
Why do
you hate kids so much?
Yeah.
Do you want
because
kids?
Because I love terrorists.
You know?
I hate kids because I love terrorists.
You want to throw like 12-year-olds on the internet and the first thing they do is like shoot people and download porn.
Of course, absolutely.
Get into dark markets and so on.
Definitely. Yeah, 100%.
Everyone has to scan a password and give a blood and a stool
blood
sample.
Blood and urine sample.
Yeah, to go online. That should be obvious.
Yes.
Why do you hate kids so much?
Exactly.
Yeah. Oh, man. Yeah,
it's funny because, I mean, we laugh because that's all we can do. But still, I mean, it's one of those things
insane.
It's totally insane.
Yeah.
And the only way to fight that, as we know with Bitcoin and lots of other systems like this, is just to build something that is actually unstoppable.
Yeah.
And I think if we do this messaging stuff correctly, yeah, okay, it might not be able to withstand state-level actors doing IP targeting and, you know, timing analysis on everything.
Yeah.
But
I mean, it's all about cost of attack, right?
Exactly. Yeah. If it allows people to create identities at will, disappear those identities, there's no server to shut down, there's no server that law enforcement can come and be like, give us all your logs. We're like, we don't have any.
Yeah.
There's the GitHub. It's
exactly.
MIT.
Exactly.
Have fun.
Yeah. It's that came up in a different discussion that I will not bring up now, but plausible deniability actually matters.
It's a really big
and
deal.
And if you can, like also for people that run VPNs and all those kind of things, mm-hmm. when you can truthfully say, I don't have any user data, I don't have anything to give you.
Yes.
That's a big plus, because if you're, it doesn't matter what it is, even if it's like an IRC server or like whatever, like a Discord server, it doesn't matter what it is.
Yep.
Once it gets big and important enough or controversial enough, someone will come knocking
like,
at your door.
We just launched, like the latest version of White Noise came out last week, and it has iOS notifications finally. And the reason it took so long is because we weren't going to do it in a way that was going to give Apple anything.
Funnel everything through
and
Apple.
We
mean, the
like,
notification systems are
we
insane,
have to have
right?
a server. That's the only server we run is a notification server. Yeah. And we specifically built it around the idea that the notification server should have nothing.
Yeah.
It should get, you know, a couple of encrypted tokens, just enough to turn around to Apple and go, send a push notification to this token. That's it.
Yeah,
it doesn't save anything. It doesn't have any logs. It doesn't know where it came from either.
I see.
And so that's like another one of these little layers of things you don't think about but are actually a big deal is you can't link all of, you know, everybody's communication to a single identifier.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, you don't want to make it easier for the bad guys.
Exactly.
And it doesn't even matter who the bad guys are.
Right.
It's like whether it's, you know, like one man's terrorist is another man's freedom fighter.
Yeah.
And so whether the bad guys are your government,
your
or
guys are the other guys.
People that want to hack you or like actual.
Well, I think
I was about to say, when is the government or actual criminals? You know, it doesn't really matter.
You're like, wait.
Like, wait.
Which is which? I mean, one thing like Max loves to say is like it's all about increasing the cost of attack as much as possible.
Yeah.
And that's all we're here to do, basically.
Yeah,
it's just
like,
hey, we want to make this super easy for anybody that could possibly need it for whatever purpose. And we're going to have to accept that some of those purposes might not be things we agree with.
Yeah, and it should also be clear that nothing is ever 100% secure. Like, it's,
100%.
Again, only trade-offs. Like,
yeah,
there's only
and
so much you can
look, I mean, there's nothing you can do to get around the government putting Pegasus on your phone.
Yeah, sure.
Like, if someone wants your data that bad, they're going to get it.
Sure.
And so, you know, we can't protect against all of those things.
Yeah, yeah. All right, nice. So tell me what's next, if you may, on the White Noise front. Where are you at, and what's on the roadmap, and what's coming in the next couple of months?
Yeah, I started a few weeks ago with this kind of blank slate of, okay, we've been working on this a while. We've faced a lot of hard things. We've like worked our way through a lot of problems. But if we really started with a, what have we learned? What could we do slightly differently, or what could we change about it? What would we do? And what I've come out with is, you know, that deterministic state machine kind of wrapped around the MLS key agreement.
Yeah.
So that's kind of the core part of how do we make this much more reliable. There's a bunch of little changes about, you know, key packages being replaceable, which we've already, you know, done in Marmot. This app components thing so that we have much more flexibility in, you know, doing the kind of setup of groups in ways that can work across lots of different clients and devices.
Yeah.
I think the other big piece of that work was decoupling Nostr as the only transport mechanism. Because if you think about it, Nostr for us is identity. It's the payload of what goes inside the messages, so what you actually see in the conversation. And in Marmot V1, let's call it, it was also, you know, very coupled to Marmot, you know, relays being the only transport mechanism we'll ever talk about.
I see.
And so I wanted to make that plug and play.
Yeah.
And so identity, obviously, that's pretty core. Like, we're going to keep Nostr as the identity system.
Yeah.
The payloads being Nostr, it's awesome because it gives us, you know, an already kind of defined schema of here's all the different event types and things that people want to know, and you know exactly how to implement and show what these things are. Transport, though, like, who cares?
Yeah.
It can be anything.
Yeah.
And, you know, all of Jonathan's work on FIPS, I think, was a big catalyst here.
Awesome.
And so, like, that's an easy thing to decouple.
Yeah, I was about to bring up FIPS and how deep you dig into it.
I really like it. I think it's really early, so I'm just keeping a really close eye on it.
Yeah.
You know, I think it also isn't like a perfect fit for what we're doing, because it's...
We'll probably make your life even worse.
Definitely. In the short term, it definitely would.
Switching to a mesh network.
Yeah, definitely. And I mean, it's also assuming that you're like connected to the other side, right? In real time.
Yeah.
And so like, it might work. But I guess the main thing for me now is like, okay, as long as the architecture of the thing is set up such that, you know, the transport mechanism is negotiated like any other feature, you know, you're like, hey, here's my key package. I only support FIPS, or I only support Nestor relays, or I support this and that and Wi-Fi and Bluetooth Direct and a bunch of other things, then, you know, you start to be able to compose the system and the clients on top of all that.
I think that's a very interesting approach, because in different situations, you might be kind of forced to do that. Like, you know, we're living in a time of like, you know, countrywide internet shutdowns and all those kind
and
of
like
things.
And like having a fallback chain through those is like, hey, use Bluetooth if you can.
Yeah.
Or use relays if you can. But if you can't get any relays, try Bluetooth.
Yeah.
So I think that stuff is really important. And it's been really cool to see a bunch of other apps pop up with clients that are interoperable with white noise and you know, other CLIs and web tools. And
awesome.
Because being able to actually test that, like, okay, this does work and it goes back and forth across these different apps. Means it's, again, you're just giving people a bunch of backups and a bunch of fallbacks. And
I think the fact that Justin was able to build Pika in, I don't know, like a couple of days, basically, that's a big success story. That's kind of...
And like the Vector guys, like the Vector team have been like super excited about all this stuff. And they've built this really cool, like, you know, kind of cypherpunk gaming looking interface.
Awesome, yeah.
But like, you know, they were like, they came to the community call last month and demoed Doom playing in a Marmaker. And I was like, this is dope. This is amazing.
That's kind of like,
we've made it, guys, we can play Doom.
If it can run Doom, then
we're done.
Then, like, you know, that's something. Yeah. That's something. Yeah, yeah. One of the demos in one of the last cohorts was playing Free Doom on an end site served via FIPS. And then it was like, okay, great.
We're finished. Our work here is done.
It works.
But yeah, I mean, it's like, it's cool to see lots of people kind of getting excited and going, okay, we can make messaging things. And like, there's also use cases like Lee from Bitcoin Jungle built this thing called Tubester, which is sort of a kid's YouTube, but the parents get to decide who can see the kids' videos.
Nice.
And the permission ring around that is actually an MLS group, but it's like not one you would recognize at all.
Yeah.
But the, you know, the parents would like add somebody to the group.
Ah,
and then the interface just knows like, okay, I'm in five groups, show all the videos from those five groups mixed in on the timeline.
So he used this particular building block to not have to build a permission system from scratch.
Exactly, exactly.
That's awesome.
So I think there's a bunch of like fun use cases you can do like that are quite different.
Yeah, awesome. Now it's going to get crowded and noisy a little bit. How are we doing on time?
I think we got plenty.
We're good?
Yeah.
All right, you just want to just get into the jungle of the people grab a coffee somewhere.
Yeah, let's do it. Park in the middle down there might be good. Again, though, it's very like civilized and quiet.
Yeah. What do you say? What if we do one more ring around the rosy and the green?
Sure.
And then we'll see where we're at, and then we'll grab a coffee.
Sounds good.
I think that makes sense. Because I'm when I'm walking in Madeira, then I have a natural timer. Because you just die of heat stroke, and I know precisely when like 90 minutes are over. And here I'm completely maladjusted. Like it's bright all the time. It's like 19 or 20 degrees, and
it's
everything's
nice.
Different. It's very nice. I think it's one of the nicest times of the year to be in Oslo.
It is, absolutely.
Speaking of being in Oslo, are we allowed to talk about AOS stuff and so on?
Yeah, we're allowed to talk about it.
Fill me in on all those kind of things, because you already mentioned like apps popping up, Bluetooth, using Bluetooth as a transportation layer. I mean, BitChat is obviously
to stand out
the app to talk about in that regard. But how close are you to what Kelly's working on, and basically, how do those things interrelate would be my question, or would be something that interests me. Because we already talked about the eCash, CashU use case for the event chains, right? Like a very similar problem. Yep. And basically, what happens if the internet shut down and you only have Bluetooth available and those kind of things.
Right.
So what are your thoughts on all the different projects and where they're at and how they might, like how can they play together, or what are the learnings from each that helped the others?
Yeah, I mean, I've got limited detail on, you know, the intricacies of BitChat and things, but I think the coolest part about BitChat is it does kind of take a a very opinionated stance that, okay, you don't need the internet, one. Two, like, how long these chats last, like, they're kind of ephemeral in most cases. Yeah, you can DM and, like, but kind of you're not expecting to be able to come back and, like, find 2 years worth of chat thread.
Yeah.
Which
I think is a feature, not a bug.
I also actually agree with that. And especially for this sort of use case, it's like, you care about what's going on the ground in a Bluetooth mesh range of you.
Yeah.
Then it doesn't matter what, you know, what's going on.
Disappearing messages baked in.
Yeah, in a sense. Yeah. So, you know, I think the really cool thing about BitChat is it did sort of prove that, like, there are these very narrow use cases that really matter in certain circumstances, and only in those circumstances, really.
Like, yeah.
There's very little reason that you and I have to use BitChat on a normal basis.
Yeah.
Other than being at a conference and having fun in a, you know.
Yeah, and the only reason is, like, if you're in a conference and the Wi-Fi is overloaded or something like that.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, another one would be, like, you're at a music festival and, you know, there's no internet.
Yeah.
And you, like, want to bounce across the festival to your friends somewhere.
Yeah.
But, you know, like, I love the fact that we're exploring all of those things and, like, kind of pushing things out quickly and seeing what people are doing with them. Like, BitChat was Jack's thing. He pushed it out there. Kali picked it up and did the Android app really quickly and pushed that out there. And then it got started being picked up by, you know, movements and protests. And, like,
Kali shared this. Like, you can see where something's going on just by looking
download
at the
numbers.
Geolocated downloads.
Oh, something is happening in Madagascar.
Yeah, exactly.
Let me check the news. Yeah, so I think, like, BitChat is a super cool example of that. I think, you know, the AOS project in general, I've been, like, kind of thrilled with. Like, it's, I think we kind of went into it, I mean, it's a year old, basically.
Yeah.
Last year in Oslo,
it's still a baby.
We demoed this thing we built, vibed over a week, or, you know, in Switzerland, and, like, vibe coding was totally new to everybody at that point. Like, the models were kind of crap. The tool we built, kind of, we DDoSed ourselves immediately and it went down, like, you know,
I remember, all
the normal things. But it's, you know, like, I think we've grown from that point of, okay, what the hell are we here for, to a system of, like, how do we connect a bunch of builders working in the space?
Yeah.
How do we, like, help, you know, what are the shared things that everybody has to deal with? And, like, how can we maybe help, you know, grease the wheels on that stuff? And how can we, like, keep experimenting and, like, quickly going, okay, this is dead end, like, drop that project, whatever, move on. Or on, you know, in my case, it's like, I've got space and time to go really deep on, can this, we actually make this work?
Yeah.
Without being like, okay, I've got a really tight clock, or, you know, it's just me and I have to, like, figure it all out myself.
Yeah. Yeah. What are you most excited about right now outside of White Noise? Because you're more plugged in than most. I think it's a fair question to ask you.
I mean, I think the most interesting stuff is, I mean, from a technical point of view, it's all the AI stuff. And I, you know, I've written zero lines of code since December, like, by hand. I have read many lines of code, but increasingly, or decreasingly so, it's gotten to the point where I barely review lots of stuff. Now, mostly that's because, like, the deep kind of crypto stuff on White Noise is, like, pretty baked already, so we didn't, you know, we're not changing things there. But if you look at the curves, it's very clear where this is going.
Yeah.
Like, the models are going to continue getting better, maybe at a decreasing rate, but maybe not. The job of software engineers has really kind of, you know, there used to be this spectrum from product idea, architecture of the technical thing, the actual implementation, which was this, like, long band in the middle that was extremely costly and time consuming, and then, like, at the other end, the actual product hits the hands of users and what are the users doing with it and how do you react to that to, like, go back to the beginning. And that whole
the
middle
feedback
section,
loop is, like, so insane right now.
The middle is gone.
Yeah.
Like, the people that are going to be, that are going to win the hardest in this space are the people that are really good at high level architecture.
Yeah.
Because the models still get that wrong often.
You have to know what you're doing.
You have to know what you're doing.
The model can do some thinking for you, but by far not all of it. And it's, like, the way I always describe it is, like, they always, you know, the bell curve meme?
Yes.
And they always, the mount mid curve has the most gravity. Like, they'll always gravitate you towards the middle
especially
of the bell curve.
Especially on big architecture questions,
which everyone should know, like, the middle of the bell curve is the most insufferable person.
Yes. You don't want to be there.
Like, if you want to do something really simple, like left side, yep. left side of the bell curve. The model, all, like you will have to fight with the model
to do
the stupid thing.
Yeah.
And if you, and same on the very right side of the bell curve, something super intricate,
yeah.
you have to fight with the model again. That's yes. like, no, yes. there's a reason why I want to do it in this complicated yes. way.
Exactly.
Don't cheat.
Do
Don't
not mess around.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So, and I think that's like, issue. But it has like very much collapsed the middle. And,
yeah.
And I think honestly, like there's kind of no point for you to read the code anymore.
It's
gotten good enough because in the beginning, all you're wanting to do is get the thing in the hands of people so that you can then start the loop.
I mean, there's people on OSTA right now that are building Android apps without having an Android device because they just have agents running
yep.
and they publish to SAP Store. And it's just like whatever the user feedback that comes in on OSTA, they'll just make changes.
Right.
They don't have an Android device themselves. They don't have an emulator, nothing. Just like build a little game and just like you can download it from SAP Store. There
yeah.
you go.
See if it works.
Yeah. That, I mean, that just shows you how far we've come. Right?
Yes.
Like that's
yes.
just
I agree.
Insane.
I agree.
That's and so cool.
So I guess like to answer your question, it's not really the like, oh, what harnesses and like what's your actual workflow? It's much more the higher level like, okay, now my job is just literally thinking about what do I want the thing
yeah.
to create and why and like
yeah.
what do I want the experience for the user using the yeah. thing to feel like and okay then how
what
do
is
we
a good
those?
Way to do things, what is the sane way to good things and what is like a
yeah.
you know insane foot gun way of doing things.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And so yeah, I just, you know, way too many projects going on. Like way
on,
too many kind of
where are you on the AI psychosis spectrum?
Pretty deep. Pretty deep.
What's the first thing you do when you wake up?
I walk past my office from my bedroom to go downstairs to get the kids up, and I always stop in and go prompt.
Yeah, that's
so
why
while
asking.
I'm making the porridge in
that's
the morning.
That's why I'm asking.
Yeah, yeah, I'm like, I know something is spinning upstairs.
Yeah.
And now that everything remote controls to your phone, yeah. Just my laptop stays open, and
yeah.
I'm happy to go for a walk in the middle of the day and just be like, oh yeah,
yeah.
keep it going. Oh yeah, I'll go for a swim with the kids. Like yeah, no problem.
Yeah. Yeah, it's strange. It's strange how quickly it changed as well. I mean, again, that's what exponential curves do. They just slap you in the face.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's a strange new world.
It's been challenging to get everybody on the team sort of believing that that conviction could be
yeah,
true.
Yeah, shout out Egger.
Yeah. There you go. There you go.
But he caught the bug as well, I've heard, right? Like
everybody does.
You guys were able to convince him that it's not
yep.
like that there is actually something useful there that will make you a more powerful engineer.
Yes, yes. And like I see where people are coming from that are still like, no, I must understand it deeply myself and I need to make sure that it's using the right
yeah.
patterns. I get that. But at the same time I'm like, but it's obsolete.
You're talking with someone who wrote like 3 blog posts on how much he hates slop.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
there is definitely software
that, yeah.
slop and design
There's
slop
tons.
Out there.
There's tons.
Yeah.
So. But you know what? There's plenty of slop made by humans.
Oh sure.
Yeah, so
I mean
like,
sure.
There's tons of human slop.
That's how we ended up with the slop in the first place,
right.
I think,
right?
Again, back to the middle of the bell curve.
Correct.
It's like, that's how these things work.
Most of the stuff yeah. that the AIs were reading was slop.
Yeah.
They were learning on slop.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, it's
All right.
true.
All right. Yeah, interesting. So what's your current setup in terms of development, if I may ask? Like, how does your development workflow look like?
So I actually use the Codex Mac desktop app and the Claude Mac desktop app more than I use the terminal anymore because you can just get more information density in there.
Okay.
Like, I can see loads of sessions down the side.
Yeah.
Rather than, like, trying to see all these tiny tiled windows and multiple tabs across the terminal, I just find it easier to view it that way. And I've just like literally max 20 on all
yeah.
the services because
yeah, yeah.
it's by far the cheapest.
Yeah.
And I probably have, I don't know, 7 or 8 things going on 5 or 6 projects in any one given time.
Yeah.
And it's just.
Yeah, I feel like that's kind of normal
yeah.
right now. That's
yeah.
kind of, if you're like most people I talk to that have serious projects and are like high output people, that's basically, it's always the same story.
And I actually, like I said earlier, I spend almost no time on trying to like tune and tweak my workflows. I'm just like, nope, that's good enough. Like
yeah.
the output is not going to be determined by which skills I have, you know, in the broad
yeah,
strokes
okay,
of it. Like maybe I'll get yeah. a couple percent different out of it, but like it really comes down to
maybe
me.
Maybe let's go this way before we get shot up there.
Yeah.
There's like a small army standing up there. What
oh, wow,
the hell?
There are actually.
Huh. There's just that seems to be the guard of
the
castle of the yeah. palace rotating. Let's not get in trouble.
Or wreck any tourists' photos.
Do you have any thoughts on kind of the next, whatever, like 6 to 12 months in terms of how to use AI more privately, how to use it more locally, those kind of things?
That's actually the thing I'm really, really excited about, the whole AI thing. I do think we're on a curve now where the local models are going to catch up insanely fast.
Yeah.
I mean, the latest high-end MacBook Pro is already like better than, you know, an NVIDIA like giant workstation from a year ago. And so I think we're on a trajectory now where very soon you're going to run lots of local models without even knowing it because they're just embedded in products.
Yeah.
You're going to run a really powerful local model on a machine somewhere, probably your normal laptop or something.
Yeah.
And hopefully you're going to be able to talk with that through, you know, something like white noise. And that's just going to be how you do most things in your life. Like, I've got 4 or 5 open calls that run on different boxes. They are sysadmins and little brain things, and they run servers for me, and they have their own Git accounts and or GitHub accounts and their own, you know, keys, and they can SSH to different stuff. And, and so I think for developers and builders, you know, whatever, it's amazing. Like, it's the best possible world. I never have to think about the implementation details. It's just like, idea, do, okay, circle back, let's, you know, adjust and keep going.
Yeah, and
I think for normal people, it's going to get that as well. You know, my wife is now like, can you just get the claw to do, like, do the thing? And, like, here's a bunch of tax documents that we need, like, annotated for the accountant. And I'm like, okay, yeah, just, like, send them to me and I'll push it on, you know?
Yeah, that's a good point. That's a good point. It goes way beyond software development,
way
of course.
Way beyond. Like, and that's actually the thing that's been more helpful on those, because it frees you away from all this, like, you know, bullshit busy work.
Yeah.
And I live in Italy, so there's a lot of bullshit busy
work.
Yeah,
sure. I mean, you know, I think everywhere in Europe, there's a lot of bullshit forms to fill out.
Yes.
You can't escape it. You can't escape it. Yeah, no, it's a brave new world. It's one of the interesting side effects that I experience right now. That's why I hate Slop so much, is that kind of online discussions degrade, because basically people just use LLMs to let them write the tweets and the articles and everything.
10,000-page, you know, blog posts. You're like, no one can read this.
And there's a massive asymmetry. Like, there's always an asymmetry in terms of refuting bullshit. It takes like 100x the effort than just spouting bullshit. But the LLMs make it so much worse. And so, I really appreciate kind of the smaller in-person events.
I was about to say, like, real life stuff, I think, is actually the other piece that I'm like quite excited about. Like, the fact that you can just go out and, you know, ping an agent to keep working on the thing.
It frees you up in terms of not needing to be in front of a laptop all the time.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. I think Pablo said this a while back. Like, his goal last year was, you know, to spend a vastly, you know, fewer number of hours in front of a keyboard.
I mean, that's why we are outside walking and not sitting in a studio, and that's why I built the Vibe Line for myself.
Exactly.
Because once those things started working, I realized, okay, why do I need to type? I'm just gonna ramble into a microphone that I have always with me because it's my phone.
I also never type anymore. I do everything via voice to my agents.
Let's go.
Yeah,
let's
just go. Single key down, and I just start talking, and then
like a year ago, a year ago, or 1.5 years ago or so, when I came up with the Vibe Line, I felt so alone. Yeah. Everyone basically called me retarded for, like, you know, just speaking into the phone.
I thought, I was like, this is a good idea. I can't wait till I have a local model so I don't have to send it to OpenAI. Voice every time.
But it also, it depends on what you do. Like, I still type, obviously, for like highly iterative things and so on.
Yep.
But most of, like, in the software engineering context, for example, most of the demo day projects that I did and those kind of things, it's just about the idea and just kind of get the idea right. And the easiest way for me is just to talk about it for like 5 minutes, 10 minutes, 15 minutes.
Yep.
Just have a monologue about what I want to build.
Yeah.
And then, like, the slop of me talking is going to be fed into the machines. And something, you know, approximately okay is going to come out.
There's like two modes I've noticed there. Like, one is that, which actually works surprisingly well sometimes, even in like the vagueness. Because when you speak versus, you know, type, like,
very different.
You type at a pace that you're thinking can be like quite precise.
Yeah.
And so you're choosing your words properly and carefully, and it's very structured.
Yeah.
When you talk, oftentimes you're like stop in the middle. And you're
just
like,
rambling.
What the hell? Is that gonna work even?
Yeah.
I don't know. Maybe we should talk about that.
Yeah, but it
more.
Doesn't. But
we'll
it doesn't matter.
In a second. And it somehow pieces it together, and it's like, okay, I think you want to do this. Let's try it, and then we'll come back and like circle back and see if it.
Yeah.
And you're like, great, perfect, thank you. Super.
Yeah. No. It's,
and like all the totally cool. You know the parakeet models and stuff means that you can do that without having to beam your voice everywhere else, and you know, it works great.
Yeah. It's exciting times. It's exciting times. I'm getting Like, I'm always of two minds for those kind of things, you know. Mm-hmm. I tend to be very optimistic and like also hyper bullish on things, with one of my many faults.
I don't know.
But now it's kind of, I'm kind of. Where should I even start? Those tools are so powerful that you can also do a lot of damage if you just build things, I would say, in the wrong way. And we talked about this a lot in the Sovereign Engineer context, like pre vibe coding even. Mm-hmm. But vibe coding happened very early on in with the second one or the third one. I don't know.
Slide in Sovereign Engineer 1. Build it the right way, don't go to jail.
Exactly. Like, exactly. Yeah, build it right and don't go to jail. That's the two kind of cornerstones, you know? Yeah,
it's a corollary. Yeah. If you build it right, you won't go to jail. Yeah, if you build it hopefully. Wrong, however.
hopefully. Yeah. But it's very hard. It was always very, and it still is. It still is very hard for me to explain what I mean by kind of build it right. And we talked about this in the past, kind of like, you know, build it in the spirit of Bitcoin, all these like washy kind of things, you know. Like Nostr to me is built in the spirit of Bitcoin, very clearly, you know, where it's just like, it's like completely permissionless, cryptographic identities, the nodes don't matter too much, they can go online and offline, no centralizing force, like those kind of things. Yep. Like it should decentralize over.
Of trying to figure out how to like coordinate what people's ideas are and why.
Yeah, with all the problems that come with it. But it's basically like, if it works, then it should decentralize over time. And we should build, like, you should have basically an adversarial mindset and think through all these little details and just play the clock forward in your head, like 5 or 10 years. And
exactly.
And I think like BitTorrent did this really well, you know.
Yep.
Like there is a bunch of projects. The internet itself did this really well because it was built in an adversarial, like highly adversarial environment. It's like nuclear war.
Yes.
We need something that is a communication system that still works
that's
if half the planet is destroyed by nuclear war.
Yes.
So that's the mindset where the internet came from.
Yeah.
And I think it's the right mindset to build anything. Systems that aren't brittle.
Yeah.
And I think the world right now is very brittle, like both like from a
socioeconomic political standpoint.
Exactly.
But also from
doesn't matter which perspective.
Yes.
Brittle. Everything's brittle.
Yeah, it is.
And that's in large part why I'm interested in robust and secure systems, because they are non-brittle systems.
Right.
And I think we'll need all the non-brittle systems we can get if we want to rejuvenate society at a large scale and like make sure that civilization doesn't collapse.
You're right, though. Like on every single aspect you can look at, farming, agriculture, like food, everything is super brittle.
And that's also why like a lot of Bitcoiners turn themselves into regenerative agriculture people.
Exactly.
And a lot of the regen farmers turn themselves into Bitcoiners because it's the same idea. It's like, oh, wow, this will actually work forever.
Yeah.
It's like a closed loop system that works forever, just like regenerative agriculture and so on. I'm not even sure where I wanted to go with this train of thought.
I think I do. Give me a second.
But now we're here. Let's break the law.
Yeah. Breaking the law. Jaywalking. I always find that funny. Which countries that's actually legal in and which countries don't give a crap.
Let's go. We can do it.
We can do it. They're not going to hit us. They're like very civilized.
Oh, yeah. We're in a very polite,
very civilized,
very polite society.
They're not going to hit us. The Italians on the other hand.
Yeah. It's exactly. Well, the countries where I usually come from and reside in. Like, you don't want to jaywalk.
Right. Taking your life into your hands. I think like your point is,
I started somewhere and then I lost.
Nostr is like building it right on Nostr means building super.
Thanks. What does it mean to build it right?
Yes.
What does it mean to build it right?
Unstoppable.
But it's not only that. It's not only that because and it relates to vibe coding because now everyone traditionally to build it right or to build it really wrong, both of them were very hard.
Yes.
Like to fuck something up massively, because you needed to be so competent and it took such a long time.
You spend a lot of time and energy and money to fuck it up badly.
Yeah. That usually doesn't happen. Like someone who's competent will be part of the team or like part of the financing group or whatever. It will tell you, look, actually, we shouldn't do it this way.
This is a bad idea, guys.
And now with all the tools we just discussed, you can have a really bad idea and vibe it into existence in like an afternoon.
Yeah.
And I worry about that. On the other side, you can also, if you have a deep understanding and want to build it right, like I think, again, like BitChat is a great example. Mm-hmm. It's just like, you know, Nostr as identities, Bluetooth as transport, and like, let's go.
Yeah.
And you can build this out very quickly, and that's incredibly powerful. And why I wanted to bring this up is because I feel, let's not go into the concert, maybe. So funny, right?
Construction and concerts.
If you don't wear microphones, you'll never notice this. you start wearing microphones and everything is loud everywhere all the time. but what does it mean to build it right is really hard to transfer, because you're cursed with, like, you have the curse of knowledge. You don't even know what you know. And explaining it to newcomers, like 20 something JavaScript kiddies that also happen to be NOSTA developers.
Yes.
You know, like, I made this joke yesterday already. No offense, Hazard, you know?
Yeah.
No, but I don't even mean Hazard. Hazard is fantastic.
No, Hazard is fantastic.
And really, really smart and really like a deep thinker and all those kind of things. But we have many people that build NOSTA clients that don't have like 10, 15 years of expertise, are 20 something and don't have a cryptography background or anything like that. And I worry that we're at a point right now where, like, if any gray beards are listening out there, please come back. Please educate the younglings.
Yeah.
Please join the crowd.
So, like, I think having kids has made me think a lot about this recently, of like the education system and like what, with the speed at which the entire world is changing with AI, like, what is their schooling even like? Or is it going to be useful at all?
Yeah.
Like, what do they actually need in order to like be able to function properly in whatever's going to be in front of them?
Yeah.
And I think a lot of it is like, how do you think through an idea and like both steel man the idea from the other side and like understand the implications at second and third order?
Yeah.
Rather than just being like, we can do a thing, let's do a thing.
Yeah.
You know, without kind of thinking about it more. And I think, you know, to my mind, that's a huge part of the problem with the political system now. It's like completely built around keep me in the seat. And so I'll do the first order thing, makes the person immediately go, okay.
Yeah.
And we'll not think about any other knock-on effects.
Yeah. And I think we have it on the tech side as well, where it's just like, now we're at an interesting point, because we brought social media to the world, basically, without thinking too much about it.
Correct.
And social media turned into attention farming slot machines.
Yep.
Basically.
Yep.
And now we see the side effects on the global scale in society, that it wasn't the best idea to do that. Just, let's just fuck around and see what happens.
Yeah.
And now we're doing the same with AI, right?
But we've seen that effect. And now there's like the first order thinking of, I know, we'll just KYC the internet and that'll fix it.
Yeah,
like,
exactly.
Guys, what?
Yeah. I mean, we already talked about the scan your passport and bring a stool sample.
Yeah.
And everything. Yeah, it's kind of insane. So again, I'll make the appeal to, I'm actually very happy talking about FIPS, that the discussions about mesh networks and building networking infrastructure that doesn't rely on DNS authorities or even IP addresses, brought him back from retirement, basically.
Yeah.
Like, he was away from the Bitcoin space for like 7 years. He's like a Bitcoin OG. And he basically was like, fuck all this. Everything got too noisy, basically, and so on. And the very, this tech problem brought him back, and he did wonders already just by being at the last cohort, talking to the 20-something people.
Before he even did FIPS, he started talking to me about white noise and Marmot.
He thinks,
and gave me so much deep insight into, like, okay, the structure of the way you're doing things is going to cause all of these sorts of things. And I'm like, you're absolutely right.
Yeah.
And I don't know. Yeah.
Yeah. He, so, and I quote, he thinks white noise is the most important project in the NOSTA space.
Which makes me really worried. I'm like, this is too much. I can't take it.
I very much appreciate it.
I really appreciate it.
Yeah.
But, yeah, Jonathan's great.
And so I think we need more of that. We need the wise old elders that come down from the mountain.
And I do. I mean, I think the apprentice model really needs to come back. Because apprenticing wasn't just about learning the skill of doing the thing. It was the learning the philosophy of why we do the thing.
And the wisdom that can't be transferred easily. I think you can only transfer it with apprenticeship, basically.
Like, in a lot of things, I think that's totally true.
Because you can't put it down on paper.
No.
Like, there's a lot of stuff that has to be lived experience, basically.
Yep.
Like why? Like, because you will, if you're living in a first world Western country, thinking about privacy and getting doxxed or those kind of things, that usually doesn't matter that much. Thinking about financial privacy, thinking about all those kind of things, why should you care?
You're like, I got a Visa,
like,
and it works.
Yeah, exactly. Like,
I don't even carry my Visa anymore because I just use my
phone. And you don't have, I was about to say you don't even have a lot of inflation and so on, but like everything has there, yeah, a lot of inflation.
There's even that now too.
But if you haven't lived through those kind of issues, you'll never understand why a private system might be important,
yes,
and why a resilient system might be important,
correct,
and so on.
Yeah.
And so I think, yeah, I think it's not optional.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see, you know.
Yeah.
The school system and everything is like vastly behind.
Let's end on that very, whatever that is, statue.
Oh, the statue.
The mother giving birth.
Whoa.
Is that it?
Yeah, what's going on here?
something like that.
Okay. I like that we're approaching it from the back, so we're really not sure.
Yeah, not sure. Is there going to be clothing involved or not? We'll see. How spread are the legs? No, yeah. It's fine. It's fine, I think.
Yeah, I think it's okay.
No, it's okay. It's okay. My mind was playing tricks on me.
Yeah.
All right. Amazing. Yeah, I'm all out of steam.
I think this is good.
Is anything we missed? Anything we want to hit on? Anything that's...
I don't think so. We'll do it again.
All right.
Hopefully the next time we'll be able to go, okay, we've either solved it or... Okay, we're going to...
What's on the agenda for tomorrow on the AOS event?
I think the AOS event sort of is wrapping with kind of going over hackathon stuff and just kind of wrap up conversations.
Are we
going
to talk on chain steps again or no?
I hope not. I want to stop talking about that. Like, it's just...
It was actually good. Like, I for everyone who's not aware, I talked to Alex yesterday about on-chain subs and the issues that might cause and so on. He's gonna go ahead and just ship it anyway.
He's gonna do every once.
But that's in part kind of what I mean when I say, like, it's so easy now to build stuff that if you don't have a mental model of the full system in mind, it will be very hard to think about the second and third order effects. And I tried to point it out on Nosser and in writing and so on. But it's also, I think it's a losing battle. He's a proper software guy. People that are not proper software people will ship whatever they're gonna ship.
Yep.
And we'll see what happens. And I've always been a big believer in rectification. So I'm the biggest proponent of, that's why I stopped orange pilling.
Yes.
I tried to orange pill people for like 10 years.
And then I
wrote the Dear Family, Dear Friends thing, and I'm like, I'm done. Like, if you ever need to know something about Bitcoin, just read this and don't come back to me before you read this. And I'm done. I'm not going to talk about Bitcoin.
Yeah.
Nothing.
Yeah.
Because I learned that maybe, I used to say like 2% are curious enough to learn about it.
Right.
I revised that number to 0.2%.
Yeah.
And the rest, 99.8%, are just going to get wrecked in one way or the other.
Yeah.
And that's how
either slowly
have to learn
or fast.
Yeah,
and I think there's not much you can do about that.
Yeah.
I'm in the same boat.
And I think on Nosser it's similar. I mean, I think we will have certain apps that use Nosser underneath that will get big, but I think in terms of like literally rolling your own ANSAC, running your own relay, all those kind of things, it will be people on the margin that are that got deplatformed like three times in a row.
Yep.
Just like. On the Bitcoin side, you get debanked a couple of times.
I think that is precisely why Nosser hasn't grown faster, is because we've been mostly absolutely fixated on keeping it pure on that side of you must roll your own insect, you must run your own relay, you must use it in the precise, pure way.
Yeah.
But like, look at Divine, it's getting huge, and like, people don't even know they have an insect.
Yeah.
They're just like, cool,
yeah.
I make videos, this is great.
Yeah, yeah.
I think at some point you can't fight that, right? Like, you have to just go, okay, I can give you as many points of places you can bump into it and want to learn more for whatever reason makes sense to you in that moment, but that's all I can do.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, I think we went through that on the Bitcoin side as well. I mean, there's a reason why Coinbase is so big and so on. You know, it's just like you make it super, super easy. But the worry with that, of course, is like if you abstract more and more things away,
you end up with the banking system.
Exactly. And are you even holding Bitcoin? Like,
right.
You know, on the Coinbase case, definitely not. And
there's,
of course, the degradations, like there's shades to that. Like there's levels to the whole thing.
Yeah.
And I think on the Nosser side is similar. That's why I brought up NSYNC Bunker for Pablo, an hour ago or so, which I consider his original sin, basically. Because like he explained it to me and I was like, okay, so you want to build Coinbase for Nosser? That's what you want to do? Like that's what you're describing to me, basically. And he was like, No. And I'm like, oh shit.
And about a week later, oh shit.
That's what's going to happen.
Abandoned.
And this stuff will pop up. Like we'll have a mix of all those things. And I think as far as the system allows you to use it in a self-sovereign way, I'm fine with that.
Yeah. Like as long as there's long as there's options and you get to make the choice, that's fine.
Yeah.
That's all you can hope for.
Yeah. Yeah. So here's to hope.
Yeah.
All right, that was great.
Yeah.
That was great. All right, let's see if all that worked. If I need to edit something, like I'm gonna shoot myself. But if that's still going, I'll plan. Great, done.